Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today, well, we're going to be talking about some powerful women, some women that are in the world working and making a difference, each of them contributing in their own manner. I have a lovely guest, Chris Stein, and she has put together a compilation of these women's statements and stories. And I think you're really going to enjoy them. The publication is called Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. Chris Stein, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, Chris, I met you at the Women's Show here in the Pacific Northwest. And I was doing a presentation, and you had a table adjacent, and we had an opportunity to chat. And I've been aware of the wisdom, a Women of Wisdom. There's a conference that's been going on since when? 1993?
Yes. Yeah, we just did our 20th conference.
Yes. So this has been something that's been going on for a long time. And I've not ever had a chance to attend the conference, but I've interviewed a lot of the people that you have had at your conference through the years. And I'd love for you to give my listeners a little bit of the story, Chris, about how this conference came about and what motivated you to not only start it, but to integrate so many movers and shakers to support you in this.
Yes, well, I didn't know this was going to be my path back, 25 years ago, even. So it came about through kind of my exploration and my spiritual journey, but, and so just steps leading up to this where it, what had transpired actually in 1992 was reading the book, The Feminine Face of God by Patricia Hopkins and Sherry Anderson. And I love stories and I was just moved by all the stories. It was, women's stories from different, they're from different spiritual backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found it fascinating. And at the time, I was on the board at Seattle Unity Church, and they have a Wednesday night speaker program, as they did back in those days. And I thought, all of a sudden, it occurred to me like it'd be great to bring women like these to Seattle to come speak. And then the thought came in very clearly, like, no, it needs to be a week-long conference, like come all together so we could create community. So I think it was the very next day I went to the ministers and said I had this idea, and they said, go for it. So I got together some of my woman friends from the church, and we started planning a conference. And we kind of set up our guidelines, what we were, the structure, what we were wanting, our values and all that, and which many of that stuff is still in set in our system today. And so the groundwork we laid back then really was the structure of laid the groundwork of who we are. And it wasn't until it was opening night in February, I think it was February 15th, 1993, and when I welcomed everybody, I said, welcome to the first annual, which was the first indicator to me, like someone else is in charge of this, telling me like, okay, you know, you're going to be doing this for a while. And it just grew every year. I mean, that the first year we probably had 24 events, it doubled the next year. And within 3-4 years, it was 9 days long. And 90 events, because we'd have many workshops going on at the same time, and evening events, we'd have the evening speakers and some performances and concerts, and but many, many workshops. It was very experiential. So, and now we kind of tailored back. We did that 8-9 day schedule up until about 2006, and then we took a little break, and we've come back. We do a Thursday through Monday, something a little more reasonable to manage. And I look back and go, how do we do that? But you know, we had a lot of people, we have a lot of help, a lot of volunteers, a committee that puts it together. It's just a great community that's come together to make it happen. And then in 5 years later, 1998, it was birthed out of Seattle Unity Church, but then I developed the nonprofit organization, Woman of Wisdom Foundation, which runs the, so we run events year round, not just the conference. Our main thing is the conference. It's really when, mm-hmm. you know, everybody looks forward to that year, yearly event. And then during the year, we have a lot of different things happening that kind of keeps the energy going and people can still, you know, be part of the community during the year. And so it's been great.
Well, you put together material of various women that really you felt gave some powerful messages. Of course, every woman that's participated contributed her own powerful message. And I was reading through the book and the talk by Isabel Allende about her daughter and what she went through, her daughter Paula. Mm-hmm. And what she went through with her daughters passing away is just extremely significant. And she was a woman that went from political exile to becoming very much recognized as a celebrated Latino writer. And when you interacted with her, and of course, every single one of these women that you feature in your book, are very, very strong women. And they are women that stand in what I call their own light. They are women that don't play the blame game. They just speak very honestly and very candidly. Tell us about Isabel.
Well, I was just thrilled to have her. And she's very generous of her time and coming up to Seattle to participate in the conference. And just a very moving speaker, you know, she, I mean, I think she's a fabulous writer. I'm sure many of your listeners know her books, and I had loved her books. But this is her personal story, you know, of dealing with her daughter's passing and what that all meant to her. And, you know, and I think I follow in the next chapter in the book is the power of stories. And I think that's just so powerful when you share your personal story. Mm-hmm. And then people can relate to it. You know, I'm sure many people there have had to deal with their daughter passing away, which you don't expect. You expect them mm-hmm. to live on past you. So she's had to come to terms with a lot of life that was painful for her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact that she went through all kinds of situations. I was intrigued by the story about her grandmother and how her grandmother was just an absolutely skilled individual. She was highly intuitive, very psychic, in fact, was teaching her to understand her own intuitive processes when she passed away. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very hard on her. And it seemed like she had, from the time she was young, experienced the loss of loved ones. This, and then to be exiled from her own country, then to rebound, become very much involved in life, and really finding her own identity. I think that's what makes the stories in your book so significant, because these are women that are making a statement that one of the most important things you can ever do, and this is a statement that would apply to men too, and that is, you have to come to terms with who you are. You must be willing to claim your own power, and you must realize you don't have to be a victim here. And each and every story that was in here portrays an aspect of life we may or may not experience. But yet through reading the stories that you share in your book, Women of Wisdom, it really does allow someone to realize that they can face up to challenges, that they can stand in their own truth and reality itself and move forward. What was the most significant aspect of putting these stories together, Chris? Because I know you have so many more that you could put together.
Why I see a book, too. I just haven't gotten around to doing a book, too, because we have more talks. So these main people in the book, these are transcripts of partial transcripts of their talks they gave at Women of Wisdom. And I had recognized back, I remember in 1999 thinking, oh my goodness, there's such a wealth and beauty of information here that these women have shared. And we were always getting emails from people, well, where's a group like yours in our city or a conference like yours? And a lot of women are very isolated. And so I just saw the need to put this out there so anybody could be inspired by these women. Because I and many people who have gone to Women of Wisdom are so inspired by these women and their talks and their stories mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how, as you say, they've empowered their lives and you know, claimed their identity and their power. And so I know, because I've gotten emails from people and connected with people, how much the book has impacted other women. Because it does give you that sense of, oh, if they can do it, I can do it too. Sometimes we put people on a pedestal like, oh, they're so wonderful, they did this, I can't possibly. But when you read how, you know, their stories and what they're sharing, it's everyday life. It's something everybody goes through. And when you hear the stories and you see how they've been impacted, it touches you and you realize you can do it too. And mm-hmm. I think that's the importance of sharing our stories, is to pass them on for people to see how, you know, how it's possible.
I agree. And I think that the power of story is so phenomenal, because when we are listening to someone, if someone is a real good speaker, we feel it within our own presence of self. And that actually empowers us as listeners, just as you said, to recognize we have choice, to recognize we can make decisions, to recognize that our attitudes we can selectively choose. And I think that that's so very, very important, because so many times people, especially women, will think that they have no options dependent on their culture. So mm-hmm. many cultural perspectives, I don't care where you come from. There are indoctrinations that women receive. I know I've had to overcome them myself. I'm still overcoming them. And it is something that we have to be awake to. And that is one of the powerful aspects of your book, because each of these women talk about how they had to overcome their own aspects of indoctrination to find who they were. And it's a do-it-yourself job. There's no shortcuts to it. Have you found one?
Oh, no. I don't think anybody has. And if they have, they may be in having illusions about that. But, you know, I think a lot of this, you know, it's just so touching to hear their stories. And it is about choice, because sometimes, you know, there is so much of that, the indoctrination of we're victims. And the fact is, we're not. That's a choice. We're not. We don't have to be the victim. And it's up to us individually to claim that, to make that stance, like, I will no longer be a victim. And I mm-hmm. think women have a lot of work on that area and about finding their voice to speak up. So I think one of the things that does, and having a book like this, is does empower women to realize they also have a voice and it's important that they speak up. And just sharing their story. A lot of times, I think women... What I witnessed, and I can't speak for men, but, you know, because what I witnessed is so much with women and being, you know, at the women's conference and running a women's organization, is that shame and hiding with those guilt and the feelings that we have, like we're the only ones feeling this and we're ashamed to share it. And when we're in a group setting, like at the conference, when you're in an intimate group and our workshops aren't very large, where people can share their story, someone will be sitting there going, oh, I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. And then they hear that story and they're able to speak. I think a lot of healing comes from speaking it. And they're able then to realize that they can talk about these things safely.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have created that safe environment, that safe vessel for women to do that. And so when you hear someone else sharing something and you go, oh, wow, I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that is very, very important. Frances Lapp, who is a woman that you have one of her talks in your book, she says something that's very important, and that is naming has power. What are the dominant thought traps that we carry around in our heads that we breathe like an invisible ether? And she brings out scarcity. Scare ends up creating scarcity. We end up creating what we most fear. And we have to have moments of dissonance where the world kind of cracks apart and you can see through into new possibilities. This is something that is so important. And it's amazing. Sometimes we can have people around us that are in thought traps. And they can be our significant other. They can be people we work with. They can be friends. They can be members of family. But here you have people that will be almost like a broken record. This is the way things are. This is the way things are. This is the way things are. And I think one of the powerful messages in your book is you're the one. We as individuals have the right to choose what we're going to put into our heads. We as individuals have the right to determine, to discern, to discriminate. We have choice. And that is really powerful when you recognize that, because then you're no longer a slave to anybody else's thinking. You're your own person, and then you have to learn how to speak up and speak out.
Right, and so what you're talking about is taking responsibility for yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to recognize, and it's hard to recognize those mental maps that we get stuck in, that mm-hmm. It's Francis Moore LePay. And, you know, people get stuck in those of who they think they are versus who they really truly are and can become. And those, I like her, her concept around that, that it's almost like a mind trap, you know, that we get into. And I think when women get together and you start sharing stories and talking, we can get out of those mm-hmm. traps.
Mm-hmm.
We start seeing through other people's eyes and we go, oh, there's another way to think here.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's important because this is what creates change. And you have at the end of each one of these commentaries, talks, whatever you want to describe it as, there are some very thoughtful questions. For example, after Francis's, you have, what are your dominant thought traps? In what situations do you buy into the fear of scarcity? What makes you feel competitive? What's your vision for a new world that supports life? How can you reinvest? I mean, there are some very good questions at the end of each one of these sections, and it's very thought-provoking.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It was something I wanted to do because I wanted the book to be an experience just like the conferences for women who can't make it here to Seattle and come to our conference. And I actually got the feedback like, they're like walking through the doors. I set it up that way where I start in the beginning of entering through our opening ceremonies and, you know, talking about the conference and the community, but also, and then all these inspiring talks. And then brought in art and poetry and all the different expressions of the divine feminine that we experience at the conference. And so I was always glad to hear from people who have never even been to the conference that they felt like they were walking through a conference. And so one of the aspects of that, because our conference is very experiential, was that there was this question time at the end after each of these talks by these amazing women, that there was something that they could do to work further with that information that speaker was talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fabulous. Rhianne Eisler, or Eisler, I do not know the correct pronunciation here.
Eisler, yeah.
Yeah, she is just an amazing woman.
She has
gone through being born in Vienna and her family escaping from the Nazis. This is a woman who really has an attitude about building a culture of peace. And she talks about metamyth and how there are people that are so afraid of change, they're trying to push us backwards. And I would concur with her because in media, I find so much repetition of old stuff that are like archetypes of the Dark Ages that people are supportive of, and they don't even realize what they're supporting. They think they do, but they don't. And it's an amazing phenomenon to observe.
Yeah, and I think that's why the internet is so amazing, because we can get other viewpoints in the mass media. And I think what you're touching on is the media, there's a lot of fear, and then they put mm-hmm. that out there. And, you know, I think people are, I don't particularly like to watch the news because there is so much fear there, and then you buy into that, and then you start being fearful in your life, and then you stop recognizing the hope. And one of the things that Frances Moore LePay has talked about is, because she has a new book about hopes, when she came, about hope, I think it's called Hope's Edge, was hearing the stories of hope. Because if we don't have that, there's more chance that we give up. Why try to make a change? Because it's never going to change.
That is what I find I hear too many times. And there is this attitude that I hear from so many people, and sadly, many of them are highly educated. Well, they sound like Walter Cronkite, and that's the way it is. Well, it doesn't have to be the way it is. What are we going to do to implement a change? And I really agree with the attitude that women who have, in many cultural environments, been put into the positioning of subservience, and it's still going on today, that we, the older generation, must educate the younger generation to know that they do have choice. And that's one of the things that I think your conference of women brings forth. And this isn't bashing men or anything like that. It's actually to empower the individual so that we can work together collectively and work together with an understanding we don't have to replay the same old garbage over and over and over again, like a broken record.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought in the men thing, because, you know, it's funny, when I had the book first came out and I was speaking around Seattle, I was at a bookstore, and the woman owner, she said, oh, I'm so glad to have the book. Before I spoke, she had it up by the counter, and she said men would come up and they'd see Woman of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women, and they'd go, is this male bashing? It's kind of like, why do they interpret empowering women as male bashing? As if we either have to have men in power or women in power, and if women get in power, then the men won't have any. And, you know, it's like, no, it's not about that. It's about balancing the power. And
right.
it's about bringing women up to the same level. I mean, we know the glass ceiling. We know women are still making 70% of the salaries that men do. We have the statistics. There's only 3% of women in the state of Washington that are CEOs of corporations. 3% are women. 16, 17, somewhere in there, percent of women in the legislature, whereas European countries have a lot more, even some countries in Africa. And so women aren't being represented, and that's one person in the book, Jean Shinoda Bolen, is really adamant about that, you know, that
yes.
We need to be represented. You know, we're the ones that are the caretakers of the children. We need our voices there to bring about issues that affect women.
And the reality is that in those cultures where there was this understanding of equality, in other words, it's not, gee whiz, the guys only do this and the gals only do that. There were certain paradigms of reality, if you want to go back to caveman days, if you want to use that as illustration. But I can guarantee you women, I've interviewed women that are mechanics, that run shops, that are in charge of guys, and there's no heavy competition here. What they do is that they look at each other and say, okay, you're better at something than I am. All right, let's use your strength, and let's respect our qualities and our capabilities and not make it an either or. I really am looking forward to seeing this change, and little by little it's evolving, especially in the younger generation. But there has to be the understanding and the wisdom that the older generation has to offer. But women have to make breakthroughs, because there are a lot of women that are stuck in old modalities, and they want to go around with mental shawls over their minds, and they're afraid of the change, because that means that they will have to take a level of responsibility. And why that's so tough and why that is so difficult, I think it has a lot to do with indoctrination. I think they're scared to death.
Yes, it's not only indoctrination in our own society, in our own lifetime. I think we're dealing with the DNA, you know, the remembrance of the generations behind us. We still carry that in our DNA. So we're breaking, I feel, a lot of things by making these changes, and it's not easy.
It's very hard, because we need to nurture ourselves. And I think that that comes from questioning, from putting yourself into environments where you're going to be able to be around people, men and women both, who are going to have the attitude of personal responsibility and accountability being a good thing, not a bad thing. Because servitude comes about when people give up their right of choice. When a few will say, and I don't care what time of history you look at, will say, I know what's better for you than you do, you poor, stupid, ignorant idiot. And they take over. And enough is enough. I don't care whether you're male or female.
And I think women are, I think we're getting a lot of new role models now, and I think we have to get out there and see who's that. That's why I find the internet so wonderful, because women are gathering, and we're seeing more and more. Like, I've been at this for 20 years, and I'm starting to see other women's conferences around the country or various places, and it's through the internet that we can find each other. And I think the important thing is to not be competitive about this, that we collaborate and we find out what everybody's doing and collaborate together to create more connections between women, because we need to support each other. Women need to support each other to strengthen that, you know, our voices. For us, I feel like if we run the conference and even the organization in a circle model, and with that, over the years, I see women's voices strengthening, because it's like a practice ground, because we're in a safe, mm-hmm. we've created a safe environment. And when you get to do that practice speaking what you're feeling and thinking in a safe place, you're stronger to go do that out there in your job or with your families or other places that are a little more scary to do that. And I've witnessed that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very true. I really think that's very true. And I think that there's a misunderstanding among many women. They think they have to act like men to accomplish what they need to do. They don't need to do that at all. They can be their own person, be their true, their own persona, to their own integrity. And I like your statement about we don't have to have this attitude of competing in the sense of it's either my way or not your way. It's really, really amazing to me that when people can work to go together in a cooperative environment, working with their strengths, how much they'll accomplish.
I think it's much more than by themselves. Yes, I just went to an evening event that was a panel discussion on collaboration versus competition. And it was interesting, very interesting discussion of, and I think we're kind of taught to be competitive back when we're kids. You know, it's ingrained in us, compete for the man, or, you know, compete for the jobs. And it's all based on what you were talking about with Frances Moore LePay of scarcity. You know, and if we believe that, then we don't think there's going to be room for us. And we got to compete, because there's only so much. And reality is, there's something for everybody. And we all have our unique gifts, and we have our unique voice, and we find what that is. And there's room for everybody. And when you collaborate in that manner, you're actually more creative. I was finding myself when they were talking about healthy competition, that, you know, sometimes competition's good. And I think, well, okay, the times I felt competitive, or I'm feeling I'm ranking myself against comparing myself against somebody else. And then, you know, it can be a kickstart for me to, okay, I got to get better, you know, but then I have to recognize there's a little bit of fear there. There's fear that mm-hmm. I'm not going to find my place, that there's not going to be room for me, that they're not going to hire me. All the fears come up. So when I think of collaboration, I get excited, and I am more creative being with others than if I'm feeling competitive.
I really believe strongly that when men and women can get together and really honestly not say, well, it's this way or that way, say, come on, let's brainstorm, let's see what we can come up with. This is our big picture. Let's break it down and let's see what we can do. And when you work together as a team towards a common objective, it's amazing the creativity that will come out. It's just incredible. Your book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and the Spirit of Women, I think is a good read even for men.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.